You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening Ashe. To Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything was well with you today. Hope you had a good day yesterday and an even better day today, the 1st of July. And, of course, getting ready for this Saturday, which is the 4th of July. The 4th of July. And I hope that the weather will be accommodating for you to do all the things that you want to do, should do, must do, can do, will do, and you get it done. But if not, and you need to stay home because this virus is raging, please do so. Please be safe. I said this, I think, Monday, that they had a chance to really, you know, put a handle on this or have it under control, have it on a downward or plateau, if you will. But of course, their rush to open things up, to greed, and then of course all the mixed messages. And well, for me, that's what I'm doing, and that's what I say for us to do as a people: to be safe, to wear a mask, to not go out if you don't need to. And I know in the South and in the West, it's more prevalent than it is in the East and in the Midwest, but it's still there. Over 35 states in this country, there have been spikes in coronavirus infection. Don't know yet about the deaths, because those will be coming. If you're having thousands and thousands of people who are being admitted, who are being tested and found that they have it and then being admitted. And some people are just going there. They haven't been tested, but now they're sick and they have to go to the hospital. They're beyond what could be done at home. That's why, to me, getting tested and knowing that you possibly have it, you can go home and do all the preparatory things, put your head under that hot steam with the echinacea and all the other stuff, drink good stuff that's warm and nice and hot for you to help kill and control that virus within you, that's in you. Eat right, rest, do all the things possible. And if it still continues, then obviously you may have to go to hospital. But if you have to go to hospital, it's not to say that you're going to be coming out. Yeah, man. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, right to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. If you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives, timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, look for podcast. Click on that, and then once you click on that, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and then there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programs we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, on Mondays, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, this program, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m.,
followed by later that evening, Monday evening, at 6 p.m. from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Wahad, followed by Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then Fridays. Then on Friday. If it's Friday and 8 p.m. Eastern. If it's Friday and 8 p.m. Eastern. Well, that's right, brothers and sisters. It's time for Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Friday from 8 p.m. On Saturdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. Weekend edition. The weekend edition. The two sisters, two young sisters that host that on that. But, and that's from 4 to 6. From 4 to 6. But then from 6 to 8 is Black Reality Think Tank. Sankofa, the Elders Council. The Sankofa Elders Council on Saturday from 6 to 8. And then on Sunday from 7 p.m. until, once again it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Then every Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m. is the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. You can get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Brother Bomani Tahimba, who has taken literally over 1,000 of our brothers and sisters to Africa. He is still doing his thing. And he has two trips upcoming still scheduled to South Africa, November 20th through the 30th. And, of course, if we don't get a handle on this coronavirus, we ain't going nowhere. So Africa for the Africans. November 20th through the 30th, going to South Africa, $3,700, and then Ghana, going to Ghana, December 24th through the 5th, January 5th, December 24th and January 5th, 2021, also for $3,700. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see video of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani 2007, Africa. For the Africans.org. If you go on that website, everything you need to make that a trip of a lifetime for you is right there. All the information, all of the literature, all of the paperwork you need, everything is right there for you. Dr. Rinoko Rashidi, go to drrinoko.com. Drrinoko.com. His upcoming trip is October 5th through October 16th, going to Uganda and Rwanda. Uganda and Rwanda, October 5th through the 16th, $4,200. And then October 22nd through November 4th, going to Kemet, also $4,200. That's Dr. Rinoko's trips. Habesha. Habesha stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. HabeshaIncorporated.org. Go to HabeshaIncorporated.org and see what these brothers and sisters are doing. They are doing the work. They deserve to be supported. Habesha is an African, pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth and families through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, holistic health, and technology. And, of course, they have the Kashi Project, where they are building in Africa. They're building in Ghana, a village, the Kashi Village in Africa. So I'm telling you, go to the Kashi Project. Go to HabeshaIncorporated.org and check out what they're doing and become a contributor to help that program develop and flourish. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, the Medu Bookstore. The number for Sister Mama Nia. In the middle bookstore, it's 404-346-3263, 404-346-3263. Brothers and sisters, let me just say this. We know that the hardest businesses that are being hit hard, let me say it that way, our American African small businesses. Some of them didn't get none of that money that all those big businesses got. Some of them didn't. Some didn't have the amount of employees or number of factors. Didn't get no money. So I'm saying it to say, support us. Support American African businesses whenever and however you can. I know Mama Nia in the mall, she's struggling. Excuse me. Excuse me. So please support her. Give her a call at 404-346-3263. Find out if she has the book that you're looking for or anything else that she might have there for you, and support her. The same with Black Dot Cultural Center and bookstore and coffee bar. That's right. And coffee bar. My good brother, Brother Gazemde Ajamu, give him a call at 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. And then, of course, there's Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End on Ralph David Abernathy, 878 Ralph David Abernathy. The number to call is 404-444-1635. 404-444-1635. And find out if they have all the things that you're looking for. They have an array of products. And they have We Buy Black. That's right. We Buy Black used to have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall, right across from, or right in that aisle there from the Medu bookstore. But they left, and now they're selling products out of Adada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. They also have Afroletics, the athletic wear with the African themes of Omex, the Moors, the Herus, the Dogon Starseed, the Rebels, the Zulus. So check it out. At Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. Us lifting us, the economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Us lifting us, tomorrow's Thursday night broadcast on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The program, of course, is called Dare to Win. blogtalkradio.com/ULU. Us lifting us. Also, too, you can call in to listen or to make your comments or questions or concerns too at 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, 9 p.m. on Thursdays. Thursday night broadcast, 9 p.m. Sanjay Dash, Haiti, Sister Gabrielle Rear, as I continue to tell you about Sister Gabby, who's doing the work in Haiti, in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti, in the rural area. She has done some outstanding work with our young people, with our people, period. They're focusing on schools. You should see go to the website. You should see the beautiful children. They're focusing on health, making sure they are healthy, measuring them, if whatever they may need. And, of course, agriculture, sustainable agriculture, as well as entrepreneurship. So check out Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E dash Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org. Sanjay-Haiti.org. Akaban Institute, brothers and sisters, I can't express enough the importance of the work of helping develop warriors, helping to develop brothers and sisters who are going to be in the forefront of this struggle for us. And that's what Baba Barudi and Sister Ya Barudi have been doing, and they deserve to be supported. Because they get no outside money. They don't seek it. So make your check or money order out to Akaban Institute, P.O. Box 10786. That's Akaban Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. And, of course, if you want to use Cash App and PayPal, the $ Ya, Y-A-A-M, the letter M, and then Barudi, B-A-R-U-T-I. The Akaban Institute's 6th Annual Complementarity Conference will be Saturday, July 18th from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. Saturday, July 18th, 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. It is an online program. It's a virtual program. The cost is $10 per person, $5 for youth, and talking about how important it is that we need men and women together. We need to protect and support one another. This is going to be a very important, especially in light of all this Black Lives Matter bull. And not, you know, it's not that I don't like Black Lives Matter, but the reality is Black Lives Matter is not controlled by us. And in respect to the three sisters, you know, the focus is not us. I'm talking about us as African people for family. But, you know, maybe that's why we need to look at that piece again, you know, in terms of how we should focus on, how we should approach it. The Inyesesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inyesesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. June 30th. White studies is a system of intellectual legitimacy which defines the activities and experiences of white Western people as the universal yardstick of human existence. James Turner. Those Africans reaching out to be saved from the entanglement of the underbrush of Eurasian, still fighting off the venomous white predators with worn, dried, ineffective twigs, while holding on to cutting, thorned vines for dear life against the sucking quicksand of alien seduction with broken and bloodied hands. Deserve every chance we can to offer to assist them, because that self they know they must be in order to regain their sanity. I repeat, that self that they know they must be in order to regain their sanity. Affirm, I assist any African who desires to be sane. Affirm, I assist any African who desires to be sane. July 1st. Hardship reveals personality. Swahili proverb. Character is at the spiritual and mortal core of our salvation as a people. If it does not identify us as a people, then we do not exist. If it is not good in us, we do more than serve, then we do no more than serve others. If it is weak, we are weak. However, if it is cast in our traditions designed to follow our way and improve on what was given us in the beginning, we become strengthened as African people. For character communicates our Africanness, our Afrocentricity. It is how our humanity is expressed. Without it, we become less than those proud of being spiritual side spirits. As warriors, we have to understand that in an African reality, character is inseparable from what one thinks, says, and does. Each of these complements the other and shows the quality of your character through its expression. As a person's eyes are the mirror to his or her soul, our thoughts, words, and deeds allow others to see into the true spirit of our character, whether kind or depraved. Some call character personalities because one's character is his or her personality on display, and vice versa. Unless deceit colors the impression we give to others, which is very characteristic of Europeans and Europeanized individuals, then one's personality should be true representation of one's character. Good character, good strong character is evident regardless of condition. Similarly, bad, weak character cannot hide. And it is in the most difficult and trying of times when we are able to see what is easily hidden when life is easy. Affirm, hardship reveals the strength of my will to be African. Affirm, hardship reveals my strength of my will to be African. The Inyesesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inyesesim. Well, brothers and sisters, I hope everything is well with you today. I hope that you are going to have a great day and do all the things that you feel you must do, can do, should do, and will do. And believe me, I love that. And I hope that you get a chance to do that. I got to take care of something right now. Let me play some music. I'm going to play a little music and try to take care of something, okay? Just a little bit of a break, you know. I'll be right back, okay? I'll be right back.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Welcome back. Man, I had something I wanted to read that a good brother sent over the internet on Facebook, and somehow I've lost it. Well, that's how it goes sometimes. But there's another piece I'm going to... I was supposed to have a guest today, and that was Brother Nkosi from the Ledge Group. And the beautiful, great work that the Ledge Group is also doing in Africa, in various countries in Africa, not just in the Western countries of Ghana, Senegal, but they're pretty much all over. I think they were even in Tanzania or Kenya for sure. So, you know, I really applaud them and the work that they do. Some good brothers and sisters, believe me. So, but I saw this one piece, and man, I had something I was wanting to read. But anyway, I saw this one piece. It was a warning that, I mean, I know that we know that at least five brothers that I know of have been lynched. I believe they're brothers. I'm not sure. But five people have been lynched. Five of us have been lynched. And, of course, there's many a time they say it's suicide. Well, the one in California is being investigated. I'm not sure about the others, but in fact, somebody told me that family members agreed that it was suicide, and I don't know. But you know, what's going on, of course, is the Caucasians understand, particularly here in America, that they're losing it.
the fabric of the society is crumbling. Donald Trump really messed this whole situation up. Thank goodness. I know we're all going to suffer, but I think there are going to be many Caucasians that are going to try. And, we've been hearing about impending, quote, race war from some time. But one of the brothers from the Huey P. Newton Gun Club in Texas, because I know there are chapters all over. I know there's some strong chapters in Texas, particularly in Dallas or Houston. I think it's Houston. But there's one of the brothers came on with this warning, and I want to play it to you. I want to play it for you, rather. And let me know what you think. Okay.
Alert as follows, comrades. This is an early alert of supposed activity this weekend on the 4th of July that would cause harm to our people on a very large scale. The Huey P. Newton Gun Club has received intel from two credible sources that multiple white nationalist groups / militias are planning a nationwide attack on all of our people over the 4th of July weekend. The sources could not confirm the motives of the nationalists, but they might be tied to the events that have recently happened with the taking down of Confederate symbols across the United States and the retaliation against police brutality across the United States as well. We as a preparedness group should take this threat very seriously for two reasons. One, for the events that have sparked the epicenter in Minnesota with the murder of George Floyd and the sudden spike of Klan recruitment in the southern states the past 3 months. Please do not take this threat lightly. Okay? Over the past couple of months, there has definitely been a spike in recruitment in this area. It is my job to pay attention to these things, and I have. There's also been an uptick in rhetoric online, threats from these different militia groups. And again, this is not a training exercise. This is real. The threat is real this weekend. Take precautions. When you're out and about with your families, you should avoid large crowds of people, which shouldn't be hard because we're still on coronavirus protocol. So staying away from large crowds should be easy. Most of the fireworks, events, and so forth, I believe, have been canceled. If not, you may want to consider staying away from those things. And I know, like myself, we're not celebrating the 4th of July, but I know people and their children like to see fireworks and may want to go out anyway. I would advise you not to do it while you're out. Be on the lookout for anyone that looks suspicious. Yeah, a white person wearing a coat or anything that doesn't look appropriate for the weather, because they might be carrying a firearm up under that jacket or whatever. Also, any packages or anything like that that might be sitting around with no one attending it, just like they announce in airports. If you see a package, no one around it, get away from it. Avoid being near trash cans, trash bins, things like that, because these white nationalists and white supremacists have been known to put bombs inside those things with nails in them and things like that. So the bottom line is protect your family at all times. Be on the lookout. We all should be on a heightened state of awareness anyway with everything that's going on around the country right now. But this weekend, you need to be on an extra high state of alert. This threat is real. This is not some conspiracy theory or anything like that. This information comes from credible sources down through the Huey P. Newton Gun Club. And it is important that you take whatever steps you deem necessary to protect yourselves and your families. If you have any questions, feel free to inbox me. This weekend, I will be available. I will be in town. I was planning on going out of town, but I will not. I will be in town the entire weekend. We are on a high state of alert. again, everybody to be safe out there. And again, take this threat very seriously.
Wow. What do you think? Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. In the second half of the program, we're going to talk about education. And education for what? I'm going to read from the Chicago Crusader, a column by my dear friend and ancestor now, Brother Conrad Worrell. Education for what? I remember when I was a member of the National Black United Front, and we had a meeting in Lansing, Michigan. Got a chance to read the plaque where Malcolm X lived in Lansing. You know, he moved from when he left Omaha, he moved to Milwaukee. He moved to Milwaukee in an area where the model cities, where the expressway went right through our community, was the area which he lived by a elementary school, which I went to when I was a kid. So he had moved to Milwaukee, and then they moved from Milwaukee to Lansing, Michigan. And there's a marker, there's a plaque in the area which he lived in Lansing. So at that conference in Lansing, the theme was education for what? One of the presenters was Brother Ken Bridges. And he did a presentation on internal reparations. His premise was that before we receive reparations, we have to do internal repair. In order for us to receive the reparation, to use them in an effective manner to help our people, to move us forward, we need to repair ourselves. You know, internal reparations. Yeah. So what do you think about this, family? Give us a call. If you're on now, all you got to do is hit star twice, and I'll let you in. Hit star twice, and I'll let you in, or hang up and call back, and I'll let you in. Do I consider this? I mean, this brother said he's with the Huey P. Newton Gun Club, and that's what the Huey P. Newton Gun Club was formed, why it was formed. And he does this investigations, and he does this information. It's what he's supposed to do, and now he's presenting it. But also, too, it's been happening. It's been stated that they would love for this to happen. Three cops got fired when the brother who became the chief of that department, I think it's Wilmington, North Carolina, or Durham, Raleigh, I don't know, one of the places in North Carolina. Their microphones were still live. They were talking, yucking it up, using, you know, the N-word and everything like that, talking about, yeah, I can't wait till race war starts so we can kill all of them, just mow them down, you know. Let me just say this for me personally. I wouldn't pick up a damn rock, a pebble, to fight Caucasians to stay here. I would do any and everything I had to do to defend myself, no doubt. But I wouldn't fight to stay here. That's what I'm saying to you, brothers and sisters. For those who want to stay, you stay. For those who have much invested, for those who feel that if you want to, you feel that this is much as ours, this stolen land is much as ours as it is theirs, and all the things that we built, literally building the White House and all the other things that we've contributed and so forth. So it is just as much ours as it is theirs. And so we should be here, and then we should struggle with them to make them accept us, to make them respect us, to so we can share in this madness. I say not. I say the most important thing for us to do is to prepare ourselves to run our world. It is not here. It is not here. And you've heard me say this, and I'll continue to say this. I'd rather live in a world of my own choosing
and I struggle in that world of my own choosing than to be a fool in somebody else's dream. This is the European's dream. This is his manifest destiny. This is his vision. And in the European's dream, it is a nightmare for African people. This is a nightmare for us. And so to me, we need to make sure that we are preparing ourselves to make the Exodus. That's right. The Exodus did not happen in the Bible. It's been proven. Stop it. You know, I saw some stuff the other day says that trying to once again prove that the Exodus happened. The Exodus did not happen. In fact, they even used the piece that, like my brother said, Pharaoh was, that's why you don't see anything written all in the hieroglyphs and everything like that. You know, that's why you don't see nothing down, because he was embarrassed and it was shameful. All those plagues, all those things that happened to them. And then, of course, taking all those people, all those riches and going, they couldn't write about that. They couldn't put that down in the hieroglyphs. They were embarrassed. No. The reason why it's not a hieroglyph is because it didn't happen. It did not happen. But it must happen. And it must happen with us. We must educate and prepare ourselves to go home. We must do all the reconnaissance work here and on the continent to prepare our brothers and sisters there to receive the diaspora, to work with the diaspora. Not in the sense like what happened with Liberia when those Negroes came over there thinking they were better because they had been in captivity in America, and now some of them look lighter and they could speak English and so forth. And then, of course, that flipped. The Africans thought that they were better because they had never been enslaved, but hell, they were colonized, but yet and still they feel that this is their home. That's rightfully so. So that situation never bonded. In fact, there's still animosity today. And we want to end that. We want to end all of that. We want to end all the divisions, all the petty differences, all of these things to come one. Africa must unite, and it must unite now. And I'm just saying this because I'm a member of the Pan-African Federalist Movement, or because I'm a Pan-Africanist, because I believe it's just like our motto, Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. Let me take a call. 646-646.
Odios, what's going on, brother? I thought you was having a guest today.
Yeah. I'm going to have Brother Nkosi as my guest on Monday. Something came up, and they were not, Brother with the Ledge Group, they were not be able to participate today. And so Monday, in fact, Friday, I'm going to have a guest, Brother Jeremiah Kamara, and we're going to talk about his new documentary, Holy Hierarchy. Holy Hierarchy.
Is he going after the Scott?
Oh,
the
yeah.
Scott Daddy.
Oh, yeah. Brothers, huh? Oh, yeah. He goes after them big time. Yes, he does. So we'll talk about that.
Oh, and so it seems the Negro scared of the white man but love the Scott Daddy. It's absolutely an oxymoron. It's crazy. We scared death of the white man, standing up to all fighting him, doing the necessary things, but we want to look at him to save us in our souls. But this filthy, no good cracker been the one who's been beating us, raping us, doing all sorts of evil to us. But we still looking for that mystery Sky Daddy to come on down and save our black asses. Yeah. I think we're absolutely insane, bro. What could be more insane than looking for the white man who's your oppressor to come and save you. I mean, how could you in your right cotton picking mind look at the picture of the Sky Daddy, a no good, filthy, stinking white man, and here it is, that devil doing everything in his power to take you off the planet? I mean,
well, you know, the problem,
at some point in time, you got to wake up, bro.
Yeah. Well, the problem I have, Jay, is that how we have been able to craft this to fit our image and interest to no avail. By that I mean is that, yes, there's some Christian religion that we, like the Shrine of the Black Madonna, some other brothers with the liberation theology, pictures of African Jesus and so forth. Because I look at it like this. This is not indigenous. I'm only looking at and would support indigenous African religion, or more importantly, African spirituality. This is not. But yet, because they say, well, you know, started in Ethiopia and this, that, and the other, and they have this, all these other things that added to it, that somehow this particular religion of Christianity can be our salvation truly and can be our physical liberation truly. I'm sorry. I don't think so. And I know some good brothers and sisters, you know, the brothers and sisters that go to the shrine, some brothers and sisters that have some churches that may not be affiliated, but they're strong churches, you know, that speak to African liberation within that theology. You know, I'm sorry, I just don't see it. You know, I'm down with African liberation, no doubt, but I'm not down with the theology. You know, these stories that they say are, because number one, the damn stories aren't historical to begin with. I mean, there's so many things that are problematic, you know. And if this religion was about healing, well, damn, with all this sickness and death that is going on all around us, I ain't seen one of these damn faith healers go up into the hospital and lay hands on nobody. I'm just being real. I had one damn report.
Did them calls talk about they couldn't get the virus, and 2 or 3 days later they was up there visiting the Sky Daddy for eternity?
I mean, you know, and then when I look at the lunacy on the continent, my God, the lunacy on the continent is ridiculous.
They say the richest pork chop chicken eating pimp preacher comes from Nigeria, and he's a black man.
Listen,
he got more money than T.D. Jakes and Cliff Low.
Listen, listen, Jay. The top 10, the top 10 money earners of Christianity, of the top 10, 3 of them are Nigerian. 3 of them are Nigerian.
It's that African Holy Ghost, brother.
Then you have some of them.
And let me hear an amen. Can the church just stand up and say your amen? You know,
man,
that's
crazy.
That's just
mad. It's madness. And then you have some of the preachers who have been saying and doing some really outlandish, ridiculous things. I seen one the other day. I read it and I said, this is real bull. I don't know if it's true or not, but they had some pictures. They said that this preacher's farts are healing. So he was farting in people's face. I tell you, man, it gets more ridiculous and more ridiculous. You know, you see this man squatting down, a lady laying on her back, and he farting in her face. Or like the ones that had his parishioners not to wear panties. I mean, it's some crazy stuff, man.
It's like Reverend Ike's, what did he used to sit on?
Reverend Ike. Prayer cloth. Yeah, the healing cloth, yeah.
You know, I mean, come on, man. I mean, it's like, are you serious? But, you know, the funny thing is, Brother O, there are a lot of people out here who will go at me and you for talking this way, you know, say we being blasphemous and we anti-God and we this and that. But it's like I always say, maybe one person Sky Daddy that came down and saved their black ass. Just name me one person. How is it that all of these years you've been looking and waiting for the Savior and he ain't coming at you? I mean, it's like, come on. Come on. You telling me you've been a faithful, you've been a good Christian, you've been all of these things, and you telling me that the sky daddy ain't going to swoop down and stop them from lynching your black ass? I mean, really, I mean, it's like we are at the point in our existence to where as we are remote control dumbness. That's all it is. Remote control dumbness, oh. I mean, you listen to some of the things that people do and say, it's mind-boggling. How could you be that naive, that brainwashed, to be able to believe in something that you ain't never seen?
Right.
That nobody has ever died and came back and said that there's a heaven or a hell.
Well, you know, they always talk about near-death experiences and people who have died and have come back and have said, I've seen this light. And that one Caucasian kid, he said he came back, he saw God was black. It whooped his ass.
Oh, man. And you see how much trouble that caused him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Whenever he said that God was black, you see the type of attack that will put against that man?
It was a boy.
You couldn't have said anything other than saying that God was black.
Right.
You know them. I mean, come on, just think about it. You hate a people that much that they can't even identify their God. They can't even say, well, my God is black without there being a damn uproar about it. That's fundamentally sick, if you ask me. There's something really, really fundamentally wrong that you can't identify who and what you are based on color and its perception because some white man is going to feel like he's being slighted and disrespected. Well, that's right. The bastard who gave you the garbage in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's crazy. It don't make 1 + 1 = 2. It make 1 + 1 = 6. I mean, it's just not something that one should even imagine is reality. But we live in this false universe. It's just like you got this whole thing with Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter. No white lives matter more than mine. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm not going to equate my survival based on the fact that I got to get along with my oppressor, with my murderer, with the one who raped my family, the one who's done so much harm to me and to the planet. I mean, there's no place on the earth to where white folks ain't just caused mass confusion. There's no place on the earth that you can identify where any people of color, I'm talking about any people of color, have been living amongst themselves in harmony, and the white man come into the midst, and holy hell, they break out, and they ain't enslaved the people or killed off the people or did something sinister.
Everywhere on this planet.
Since they came into existence. Yeah. And whenever you ask a white man that, they can't never answer it, and they're not going to answer it because there's no place in the world. That right there should tell you everything about the white man. There should be nothing more said in reality in regards to the relationship between white people and other people on the planet. There should never be any discussion. There should never be any talk about us working with that devil. Of us coming together with that devil. Only a fool and a retard would believe some madness like that, that we can get along with your moral enemy, someone who has never shown you a day of kindness, an act of kindness as a group of people, and who will murder your black behind in a drop of the dime and go on about their business and think nothing of it.
I'm going to tell you, what I hate most is the fact that what they have done to us mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, stripped us of all of our identity of who we are as African people, made us hate ourselves, made us hate our skin, our nose, our hair. made us hate our women, has alienated us. You know, I hate, let me just say this, and I'll say this, and I've said it repeatedly, and I'll say it again. I don't hate Caucasian people. I don't hate anybody.
I hate them,
let me just say it. Let me finish up.
I hate them.
I hear you, Jay, and I understand you. But I'm saying this, and I mean this. You know, I have worked with a number of Caucasians over the years in various organizations. Some were real cool. Some were all right. I don't hate anybody. I love humanity because I know where humanity began in Central East Africa, and it migrated from that point. And what made human beings different is the ability to adapt the environments that they find themselves in. So it's all one. But let me tell you what I do hate, Jay. I hate a system that Europeans have created, giving themselves the top position with everybody else at a lower position, with us at the lowest position. It has had serious effects on us as a people globally. The whole mindset of the world is anti-African. Dr. Clark said it right, and he said it best. We have no friends. We have no friends. You want a friend? Go look in the mirror. And don't leave that mirror till you like what you see. That you like your nose, you like your hair. Not that you like your nose or your hair. Excuse me, I mean to say it like that. That your eyebrows are arched. No, you like who you see historically. You like who you see culturally. And you embrace that, and you embrace each other. We have no friends. Brother, it's unify or die. That's what time it is. It's Pan-Africanism or perish. That's what time it is. And there's no other discussion.
Hey, Oshi,
yep.
You said it so right. You said it so eloquently. And the reality is this. If we don't wake up and realize it, we are going to perish.
Yeah.
Because the position in this country for black people is not getting no better, brother. If anything, it's probably getting worse because we too damn busy trying to integrate with our oppressor.
Yeah.
And the oppressor is going to do one thing. He's going to always dominate you, and he's going to always manipulate you. And for some reason, black folks can't seem to realize that they're constantly being dominated and manipulated by their enemy. So here it is, they want to sleep with them, they want to integrate with them on any type of level, they want to be around them, they want to do all of the things to make them think and feel that we could be friends with them, that we could get along with them, that we're here for them. Oh, come on, man, please.
I hear you. Well, listen, listen,
get you want to do the South African burden. Get you want to do a South African burden next time and feel good about it and go home and have your favorite dinner, some beef, some pork ribs, you know, and your chicken fried rice from Kung Fu. Put me on the hold. Oh, I'll talk to you
later,
brother.
All right, Jay. Brothers and sisters, we're going to take a break. You're listening to African Perspectives. Here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. This program, African Perspectives, on Monday, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8, followed by Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturday, Black Reality Think Tank, Weekend Edition from 4 to 6, followed by Black Reality Think Tank, Sankofa, the Elders Council, with my good brother, Alfonso Watkins. And then on Sunday, once again at 7 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And every Monday through Friday, the Warm Valentine Show from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. I have some callers out there, so I'm going to pick them up. Good afternoon, caller 225. Good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon, Oshi. I didn't have any comments.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll tell you what, you hold on and I'll give you something to comment about.
Okay. All right.
Okay, brother. Thank you. Okay. All right, that's Brother Pugh. Okay. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, good morning, good afternoon to you.
How are you, my brother? How are you, Paul? How are you doing?
Oh, fantastic, brother. Good. Absolutely on top. I can tell you a little story. You know, I was listening to a radio station in Washington, D.C., and I heard this brother called Brother Jay, I think he goes by, yeah, and he said to a grown man, he says, that grown man better come out of the closet, right? And he was referring to a brother, and I think the brother's name is Johnny, you know? Mm-hmm. And then this brother, Johnny, comes back and says, listen, I used to be in the army, and in the army, I was used to tapping people on their chin. Ah, it was the funniest thing I ever heard, man. I tell you, Brother Jay, man. Oh, that brother, he's something else.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I tell you, he does keep us entertained. Oh, fantastic.
Well, listen, Brother Paul.
I don't think the brother was very happy about being told to come out the closet.
Yeah, no.
Wow.
Listen, did you hear earlier when I talked about a brother from the Huey P. Newton Gun Club saying he got a directive that the 4th of July, which is this Saturday, that there's a planned attack by a number of paramilitary Caucasian racist groups who want to begin a race war. And, you know, here in America, at least five brothers, from what I understand, have been lynched. And they've stated many of those lynching were suicides. Just like here in Atlanta. Here in Atlanta, about a number of years ago, when the, you know, Trayvon Martin, and not Trayvon Martin, but just about 4 or 5 years ago, when those things were still happening, a brother was lynched here in the city of Atlanta. And right away, I was like, man, I know they haven't even done a good investigation, but right away they said it was, you know, suicide. He got lynched in a park here. And there was no visible way that, unless somebody assisted him, putting a ladder up or something like that so he can hang himself and take him back. And so you don't, because there's no way that you could see that he can climb that tree, you know, put that rope around him or hoist himself up or whatever. But yet and still, you know, and ironic, let me just say this. This is another coincidence that the Stone Mountain, Georgia here, in Stone Mountain, Georgia, it is one of the rallying points for the Ku Klux Klan.
and they had just had a Klan rally. One of the things, as far as initiation is concerned, from what I understand, I don't know, and nor do I care, but I do care because it affects our people. As an initiation, you go out and kill a brother or sister, you know. So that's what's happening, you know, and I don't know. I know I don't own a gun, you know, to protect myself and my family here, but I'll say this, you know, whatever I have to do, I'll do, you know, but I, you know, let me say this to be real clear though, as I said earlier in the program, I wouldn't pick up a damn pebble, a damn rock or anything to fight Caucasians to stay here. Okay. I wouldn't do none of that. This is their madness and I want to get out of it. It's just like as if I was in Britain. I wouldn't do a damn thing to fight the British for me to stay in England. What I would do is go home. I would go home to Jamaica, but I wouldn't even go to Jamaica because even in Jamaica, the British crown rules quasi-like. So I'd go back to Africa. At least I know in Africa from its roots, that is ours. That is ours. And if the brothers and sisters in Africa understand that we need each other and we're welcoming each other and we want to come there to build, that's the best thing that could happen. And I'm hoping and praying that begins to take shape because that's what needs to happen. If we're coming to a point where there's going to be some kind of conflict, some kind of, quote, race war in this country, I don't see that happening. Number one, we're outmanned and we're truly outgunned. You know, right on to the Huey P. Newton Gun Club, right on to other gun clubs that has been formed in the last, since Trump has been elected, or even when Barack got elected. Because you remember, if you don't remember, when Barack got elected, there was a big rush to buy guns. They were buying up guns like you wouldn't believe, and ammunition. Because number one, they were talking, it was said to them that he was going to eliminate the Second Amendment. Well, it's very easy to scare Caucasians. They're going to eliminate the Second Amendment, so you better hurry up and get a gun right now, you know. And then, of course, it's been problems for us getting guns. I don't know if you listened to Time for an Awakening Sunday night. Had their brother on from another gun club. You know, he was talking about how big of a problem it was for some of the people in the community to buy guns. You know, so we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens.
You see, Barochi, absolutely. I mean, it's a frightening aspect, to be honest with you. It's a frightening aspect. But, you know, and I'm listening to what you say. The practical and the reality, if a race war did erupt, personally, I don't think the average man's ready for war. Because from what I am observing, you know, most people, they're not trained to fight. Because before you can, I mean, it's okay having a gun, but can you fight? That's the thing. It's just not about having a gun. It's about, can you fight? Can you go without food for a month or even 2 days? Can you go without water for 3 days? Can you run? How fit are you? Can you get away? Can you hide? Can you climb? You know what I'm saying? And when I, you know, I'm not too pushing my own credentials, but my dad's a martial artist and I have three brothers and all of one of us, we had to run every day for the age of eight. We had to run every day. My mom used to complain, you know, why you make these boys run all the time? You know, we done boxing, martial arts, all kind of martial arts, fighting all the time, you know, and we were instilled in our mind that we have to be able to defend ourselves. That was instilled by my father in our minds. We have to defend ourselves physically. We have to be fit. My father is one of the black men I knew who can swim like a fish. He can jump and do 3-4 flips from the top board. He's very athletic. He back flips, front flips. He, you know, he very athletic person. He enshrined in our mind that we have to be able to defend ourselves. Mm-hmm. And to a certain extent, we can, you know. But when that experience and looking at my peers, a great deal of us are not fit.
No.
We smoke, we drink.
Yeah.
We
do drugs.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
We can't run. Yeah. We can't get away. Having a gun ain't enough. It's not enough. You know? So I really do get what where you're coming from.
Yeah.
I really do get it. And it frightens me. It's frightened me for a long time. It has really frightened me. It's frightened me because I think when I observe it, I think if I look at, like my mum come up in the 60s and stuff, and I look at the pictures, I can even recognize that they were fitter then than we are now. We're out of shape, badly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're not mentally ready for conflict. We're not mentally, and we're not physically. So, you know, I totally get where you're coming from. But my problem is that Africa is not prepared for any mass movement of Africans. It's just not. And most of the governments there who are in control are neo-colonialist governments. Kwame Nkrumah talked about this. They are neo-colonialist governments.
Mm-hmm.
They're not friendly to pan-Africanists.
No.
They're not.
No, because those government officials, those who are in a position, have benefited so tremendously, have consistently ripped off their people, putting money into overseas bank accounts, Swiss banks and so forth, and vacationing at those places. In fact, really willing to take up residency over there once their terms or once they continue or finish looting the country. You know, there is so much work for we as African people who are truly committed to Pan-Africanism, committed to African liberation, committed to African self-determination. So much work to do, and it's education that's going to do it. And see, and so therefore, in that education, we learn about nation building. We learn how to build stuff. We also learn how to protect ourselves. We learn the art of war and so forth. All these things are encompassing, because once we make this move, we are going to have to defend that. We're going to have to defend that. And at this very moment, you are right, Brother Paul. We are in no position to defend anything. So let me go ahead and get this piece in that I want to read on education. Just stick with me, Paul, okay?
Yeah, can I just say this, though?
Sure.
Actually, just based on what you just said there, yeah? Education, absolutely. I mean, when you said that, what came into my mind is this, yeah? If we really, as black African people on the planet, really, really appreciated what we've been through, really understood what we've been through, within our education, we would be teaching self-defense as a matter of standard. But sometimes when I talk to my people, the first thing they say, they don't condone violence. How can you say, you know, anybody's entitled to say what they want to say. Everybody's entitled to say, but I've never accepted that. How can I tell myself that I don't condone violence and I'm living with the most violent people on the planet?
There it is.
That don't make sense to me, and it's never made sense to me, never,
exactly.
Ever. And it don't make sense to me from that time to this. Yeah, because I've seen what they've done to achieve what they've done. And how they've achieved it is through nothing but violence.
Yes. Yes.
So, you know,
they're the only ones. They're the
only
ones. They're the only ones on this planet that have committed genocide. Now, when the European, hold on, when the European Jew talks about that, that ain't genocide. Okay? The European Jews were not. Genocide is when you are totally eliminated, when you are erased. And the Europeans have done that in a number of places. And they're the only ones that I know, unless somebody can, you know, rescue me if I'm wrong. They did it in Tasmania. They did it in what is now Haiti and the Dominican Republic to the Akwa people. It has been done by them. They're the only ones who have made instruments of death, of mass destruction, and are willing to drop a bomb on your ass to prove it. So, you know, you're right. All this talk about being nonviolent, and that's, of course, is so that are passive, and of course, when the come down happens, you know, you'll be like a sheep being led to slaughter. Let me go ahead and do this, Paul, and just stick with me, okay? All right.
Absolutely.
Education for what? This is an article that my dear friend, Brother Conrad Worrell, who's an ancestor, he passed from the COVID-19 a few weeks ago. His service was, I think, 2 weeks ago in Chicago. A great man, a dynamic man. When I heard that he was sick, I you know, knowing him and how he was, I didn't know he had more underlying factors. I thought, sure, he strong brother, just cantankerous old dude, you know. But man, I miss him and I love him. Education for what? When we, as I stated earlier in the program, we were in Lansing, Michigan, and we had a title of that MBUF conference, Education for What? Throughout most of our lives, African people in America have been told, if you get a good education, you can get a good job. African people in Africa were told something similar. If you get a good education, your condition in life will improve. In the early part of the 21st century, in the 20th century, excuse me, in the late 1960s and the early 1970s, the thrust was to encourage African people in America at least get a high school diploma so they could be eligible for a job in the significant segment of the workforce. The explosion of the 1960s civil rights movement and the Black Power movement forced colleges and universities to admit American Africans to their predominantly Caucasian campuses in large numbers. Today, American Africans in America are encouraged to get a college education so they can get a good job. The education market has been saturated to the extent that a high school diploma of the 1930s, 40s, and 50s is, in most instances, has the same meaning as a college degree today. He's right. That meaning is that is one of a college degree qualifying people for entry-level jobs at the U.S. labor market, except for those instances where people have been trained in specialized fields at the undergraduate level. What we hear repeatedly today is that we must concentrate on African people in America's reading, writing, and math skills at the elementary and secondary levels so they can compete for jobs that will be available in the U.S. multinational corporations in the 21st century, driven by the world of technology and computers. Many of our ancestors in the 18th and 19th and early 20th centuries who were concerned with the issues of education asked the question, education for what? It is quite clear that the major direction of U.S. educational policy has been to train and educate African people to work for white folk, to work for Caucasians. That is to teach them to read, write, and compute so they can be prepared to work for Caucasians. In a paper written by our great ancestor, Dr. Jacob Carruthers, Baba Jetty, several years ago titled Black Intellectuals and the Crises in Black Education, he observed, when the chattel captivity system was destroyed by the Civil War, one of the first acts of the victors was to provide for African schooling on a wide-scale basis. The Northern industrialists thought their philanthropic alter egos began finding and establishing Black colleges. These colleges were intended to sit atop of a Negro education system. Further, Dr. Carruthers wrote, by the turn of the century, even Southern Caucasians were making us of this Negro education system to facilitate the transition from the old chattel to the new chattel, but equally effective system of African exploitation. Carruthers explains the new system depend upon the cultivation of a African elite to serve as examples for the masses of Africans and to demonstrate the rewards of obedience. The educated African elite, Carruthers pointed out, demonstrated time and time again their ability to do what they have been trained to do. Eventually, a few of them were invited to manage the segregated colleges that were established to train African teachers. In this manner, a small educated Negro elite became overseers of the educational affairs of millions of American African people. This model of education that continues today was established by the so-called leading Caucasian educators in the country who met at Lake Mohawk in New York, a resort area. Lake Mohawk in New York on June 4th through the 6th in 1890 and June 3rd through the 5th in 1891 to read and discuss papers on what they officially called the Negro question or the Negro problem. Again, Dr. Carruthers writes that at the end of the second conference, they had decided that the primary things that American Africans had to be taught were more morality and the dignity of labor, of working, the dignity of labor, the dignity of working for Caucasians. African people in the United States have a rich tradition of leaders who have taken issue with the Caucasian conceptualization of the mission of education of African people. David Walker, Henry Highland Garnett, Bishop Henry McNeil Turner, Martin R. Delaney, and Edward Wilmot Blyden were 19th century advocates that believed the education of African people should be designed to assist us in doing for ourselves. In the 20th century, leaders such as Marcus Mosiah Garvey, Dr. Carter G. Woodson, Elijah Muhammad, and Malcolm X all spoke and wrote consistently about the need for African people to develop an educational program aimed at developing African people to do for ourselves. In other words, we are still challenged today to create an educational climate that inspires African youth in America to understand that the purpose of education is to develop the skills and historical understanding of the past as it relates to the present and future in preparation for working for self and the liberation of African people. This is the challenge of the 21st century, to defeat the 100-year tradition established by Caucasian educational leaders who created curriculum for Africans in America designed to prepare them to work for Caucasians. Our esteemed ancestor, Dr. John Henry Clark, reminded us repeatedly that history is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a clock that they use to find themselves on the map of human geography. The role of history in the final analysis is to tell the people where they have been, what they have been, where they are, and where they are. The most important role of history is to tell the people where they still must go and what they still must be. To me, the relationship of a people to their history is the same as the relationship of a child to its mother. The purpose of education must always be for us to do for ourselves. Ashe, do for ourselves. That's what it's all about, to learn. And not just to do for ourselves, but to protect ourselves, develop and grow, to come together. Here's a call, caller 404-573. Good afternoon. Okay, just want to listen. Okay, 225. Good afternoon.
Yes, Oshie?
Yes, go ahead, Brother Pugh.
Well, actually, no, I don't have any comments. Just
okay. Listen. All right, then, dear brother. You know you can do that, man. I appreciate that for sure. Okay. So if
Ahotep, Baba.
Okay. Hey, Queen, how are you?
I'm okay. I'm well. Thank you so much. Yeah. I was on mute. So, yeah, I'm just listening. I came in a little late, but of course, education is, and we have a right, and we have talents to go back home and teach and help and build.
Yeah.
To go back home.
Yes. It is the only thing. The only sane thing that we should do. We are here in the midst of an open and sworn enemy. Now, I understand the Republic of New Africa and the Nation of Islam and others who say, well, I want to separate. I want them to give us some land. I want the five states. I don't know why they didn't take Florida, too. Damn. I want the five states in the south of South Carolina, Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, and Louisiana, you know, I don't know why not Florida, but anyway, and considering what, you know, as Malcolm said it best, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. When we stepped off that damn plantation, that's all we wanted is for y'all to leave us alone and we would do for ourselves. And so you had a Boley, Oklahoma, you had a Rosewood, you had a Tulsa, Oklahoma, you had a Lane, Arkansas, you had a number of places where we were doing okay. And then what happens Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
The Caucasian and his jealousy and his envy and his demented mindset and his evil spiritedness vamped on those communities under the disguise of a Caucasian woman being a cop. You know what? They could have used, they could have used any excuse, because the bottom line was they wanted to destroy those communities. They came in there and they robbed them. They kicked us out, hurled us out, they robbed them. And once they took what they wanted, then they burnt them down. And no one, and no one of all those insurrections of the the 100th anniversary of last year, the red hot summer of 1919, and years before and years after, no one, no Caucasian, in all those lynchings, you have a picture. They even made postcards of them. They even made it a public.
They even made relics of some of the deceased people whom they killed. They even made trophies of some of their.
I'm talking about, that's what I'm saying. There is nothing we can do. Nothing we can say. We have to get out. There is no way that this Caucasian can be reformed. Are there some good Caucasians? Okay, maybe so, if y'all know. And like I said, I've worked with some. I coached football with a Caucasian dude for 30 years. Me and him worked well together. But I didn't have him as a trusting friend. Hell, he was, he supported Trump.
Of course he would.
Yeah, you know, he was a conservative dude. But we worked well.
Because he serves his privilege.
Yeah. But
he serves his purpose.
Right, but we put a football program together that we helped a lot of kids. And we didn't charge him a dime for him. He was a firefighter. I was a firefighter. Put our money together, and that's what we did. Because I got a chance to coach football. I put a call out to say, hey, I need – because you can't coach football by yourself. I know you don't know that. But
no, you don't know that. Let me tell you something.
Go ahead, Queen.
Yes, sir. I have six brothers and one father.
All right, then. Yeah, then you know.
Hold on, I'm not done. And one television. So I had to watch.
There you go.
They watched.
Exactly.
And I learned about baseball, football, soccer, even hockey.
Yeah, I hear
and
you.
And tennis.
I do.
But you can't do mostly anything by yourself.
By yourself. So I put that call out there, and many people said, yeah, but they weren't. I mean, I chalked it up to their head, not their heart, because I know they might have said that they could do it, and they didn't understand the amount of time and energy that it would take to do it. But this dude answered that call, and me and him had worked together for over 30 years of having a football program. For our youth in Milwaukee. And check this out. We coached at two places. One was the Hillside Boys and Girls Club, and then later at the Salvation Army. And guess what our colors were? Red, black, and green.
Red and black.
That's right. Red, black, and green.
Girl. And green.
We were the Panthers.
African brothers and sisters need education on all levels.
Yes.
From the spiritual, they need to be re-educated and re-assimilated back into their natural self.
Yeah, yeah.
As we have been.
Right.
So we have every right and the job to do to go back home.
Yes, yes.
And re-educate them.
Yes.
As we have been re-educated, you know, things don't come all of a sudden because we may not be able to hold it or process it or see it or know it. So now we know. We know for sure. And some of us, we just going to have to kiss them and say, I'll write to you.
Yeah.
So that's a reality as well.
Okay.
And some of us are ready and anticipatory to go back home and be accepted and invited to come back. And we got work to do so we can go back and build whatever. I don't care if it's just being the nanny, being the cook, planting the seed, hoeing the land, you know, watering the horses, whatever you can do, your talent is needed. Building the houses, putting up the electrical wires. We all can, you know, we can do what we can do. Peace to you all.
Thanks. Thank you, Gwen. You have a blessed and wonderful day, dear. Thank you. Yeah, we have tremendous work to do. And that's why I'm saying for many of us, it's not so much of the technical sense for us to educate ourselves. We need to educate ourselves in terms of labor, in terms of learning, plumbing, masonry, you know, all of those things. We need to, because we're going to have to go to the continent and teach, and they're going to have to learn, and we learn together, and then we're going to have to build. They're going to be needed for roads, highways, railroads, ports. You know, we have to make sure that, you know, and I've been playing this particular piece. I should have played it today. You know, Africa, it's your turn. Africa, it's your turn. Because we have all of the resources. We just got to develop the will and the energy to go over there and manage it, to work with our brothers and sisters there to manage it, and to get to the understand, to put aside all the petty differences. Yes, I respect your cultural rights, but your rights don't supersede what's most important is Africa being one. The most important thing that has to happen for Africa is the unification of Africa, a one Africa. Kwame Nkrumah understood it. He understood it when he took Ghana and was the first to break from the European. He said it at the conference, at his inaugural. He said it. That Africa must become one. Patrice Lumumba understood it. Idi Amin Dada understood it. Thomas Sankara understood it. There are still many others that understand it, but yet on the continent, because of European dominance and Western dominance, you have divisions and fractions, because a lot of the so-called leaders have been educated here in America or in Europe. We have tremendous work to do. That's why education for what? Education for independence, education for self-determination, education for liberation, education for sovereignty. That's what education is for. Education for us as a people is not so you can go work for Caucasians. It's not so you can be able to have a nice office downtown. Not so you can be the first one to live in this neighborhood or be at, or have your kids go to this damn school. That's why we must prepare ourselves to Exodus. That's why we must get up out of here. All of the mineral wealth, as I say in my closing, that Dr. John Henry Clark said, that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and showing the hell don't want to pay for, is all right there on the continent of Africa. Even though hundreds of years Europeans been taking out diamonds and gold, hundreds of years, it is still more there than as it was, you know, not as it was before, obviously, but there's still more there for us to utilize for the betterment of the continent and for the betterment of our people. But see, if we don't unify, we're going to have 300 million Chinese living in Africa. We're going to have more Europeans, the European Jews, the multinationals, all of that. And then, of course, the idea and the implementation of the idea of depopulation, especially us. You know, Europeans are dying. You've heard me say this many times, and the facts are there. They are experiencing negative population growth for every one, for every two that dies. Only one is born. So they're experiencing this. Their numbers are dwindling. That's why if you paid attention to that immigration situation that happened about 4 years ago, maybe a little longer, where you had all these people leaving Syria and other parts of the so-called Middle East and going up into Europe. Those people, some of them, were welcomed by Germany and Austria. Why? Because they needed them to do labor. Both European population age is damn near 40. African population age is under 20. That's why I was very angry to find out one country, I can't remember who it was agreeing to be tested for the coronavirus. They were willing to test the vaccine for the coronavirus. Man. So once again, dear brothers and sisters, this is where we are. You have a question? 404?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Queen.
I was thinking about the re-education. With all the education that is already has been going on in the motherland and transporting her educated to European countries, if you look at it, it did us absolutely no good. It benefited us nothing. The people are still living in a well below, you know, the same way they lived 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So all that miseducation has done us absolutely no good whatsoever.
Okay, so you heard me read Conrad's piece, Educated for Education for What? And you heard me state that the European devised an educational system that would teach you the minimum to work for them. It's always to work for them. They don't want to compete, okay? They never want to compete. They're always trying to find a way that will put them in the best position against all competition.
And if we don't hurry up, if we don't unify, we won't take all of us, some of us. They will have another neocolonialism.
That's
from
right.
China.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. We time for us is of the essence. And the direction for us must be for us to reclaim our heritage. We must do that.
Yes.
But as you can see, there's still the old leadership guard of a Sharpton and Jesse and all those other the preachers, all the damn preachers. Because those individuals are comfortable. They have a good living. They have worked well with Caucasian because why? They ain't upsetting nothing. They ain't changing a damn thing.
Yes.
They're maintaining the status quo.
Yes.
And they don't give a damn that the poverty consistent to persist. And of course, our lives are being in jeopardy and we're losing our lives. They don't give a damn.
Well, we can't look to them. We have to formulate a new leadership. I no longer have, ever since, let me think about it a minute, the 80s, the black caucus, and I'm like, well, what are y'all doing? What are you there for? I have not looked to them for lead. I cannot. We should not. We have to come with our own new leadership as these youth have come with a new fire. We just cannot look backwards to them anymore.
Let me look further back to
our scholars who pointed us to the way. But we can't look to them. I don't give them any energy.
Let me say this. When we consider this, our situation here, it ain't about removing some damn statues. Okay? It ain't about putting down a flag, taking down a flag. It ain't about some damn reform of a police department. All those things are symbolism without substance. The substance is that this country has an economic system designed off exploitation. Capitalism is an evil system designed off exploitation. In order for me as a capitalist to have the multitude, the magnitude, the opulence, all the shit that I have, you can't have nothing.
Right.
You can't have a damn thing. And I'm saying that to say is that all the stuff that they're doing don't mean a damn thing unless they're coming to the table and says, we are going to restructure this and we're going to restructure this economically.
Do you think that's going to happen?
Hell no.
No. No. Absolutely.
Absolutely not. In fact, one of the things that was in the paper a couple of weeks ago, in the light of all the things that are happening, is that one issue that they want to talk about, they don't want to deal with, is reparations.
Reparations.
They don't want to deal with that. They don't want to deal with redistribution of wealth. In fact, it has been stated, even poor Caucasians believe.
Right.
They don't want to deal with redistribution wealth because they believe that they too can be a part of that millionaire class, part of that 1%, 10% who run every damn thing through an inheritance, through a lottery pick, or through some kind of miracle of whatever.
Yes.
So I'm saying is...
through their skin color.
Right. So these are the realities that we have to deal with. And so that's why I'm saying let's stop it. Don't put no more damn energy in trying to make these folks accept us and treat us with dignity and respect because they ain't going to do it. Damn them. Yes. Let us learn all that we can. Let us do all that we can.
Yes.
Okay? To
educate
ourselves, each other, and go home and build.
Yes.
Kick everybody's ass out.
Yes.
Put a 10-year plan together, just like they did in China. So China, get your ass out. You remember Mao? We're doing the same damn thing. Get your ass out, China.
Yeah.
I just read another piece about some Chinese killing some people in Zimbabwe, I think it was, at one of the mines. So everything on the continent is going to be ours. And the folks in the north, those so-called Arabs, Because we ain't having nobody to be mistreated, no Africans to be mistreated on the continent of Africa. Now, y'all some Africans can go over to Saudi Arabia, some Africans can go over to Qatar or Oman or whatever, and they're going to be mistreated. That's their damn fault. But on the continent of Africa, in Libya, in Mauritania, in Algeria, hell no. It ain't happening. This shit is over.
It's over. Your day is over.
It's over.
Sun has set. That's
right. So all of them,
We got to, we have to get in our collectives, those with the energy and the knowledge and the abilities, and we have it all.
We have everything we need, Queen. We have everything we need. The only thing we don't have is the mind. And the will to bring it about. Marcus Garvey said, up, you mighty people. You can accomplish much what you will. It's the will. Do you have the intestinal fortitude to make it happen? Do you have the will? Are you able to separate yourself? Are you able to kick these Caucasians to the damn curb and think African consistently? Yes. That's the question.
Forever.
We still suffer from the Urugu virus. Damn, the what's worse, the Urugu virus or coronavirus? Okay, they both will kill you. But to me, the Urugu virus, because it is
the Urugu
virus, because it has decimated African people. It has made us think and behave all over the planet.
500 years ago.
So I'm saying the time is of the essence. When you look at what these folks are planning. And so I don't know if you heard early in the program when I played this piece by a brother from the Huey P. Newton Gun Club, alerting our communities across this state, across this country, rather, about some of the paramilitary, European paramilitary groups, Caucasian military groups, who want to start a race war. Do the same thing that Gillum Roof did in South Carolina. I want to start a race war. We are outmanned. We are outgunned. To hell with them. I wouldn't pick up a damn rock to fight Caucasians for me to stay here. To hell with them.
Yes. No, that's not. It's a mindset. They want to lull us in.
Yeah. Well, listen, so,
always been espousing that venom for 400 years.
Well, listen.
You know, we want to, at least since the turn of the 19th century.
Listen, Queen, I got to get out of here. I appreciate it. I'll talk with you later, okay?
Peace. Yes, dear, yes.
Peace, my sister. Ashe.
Peace.
Peace. Hey, Paul, I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for holding on, man. I got to get out of here, man. So I appreciate you. You have a good time and you have a good
All right.
Time.
Well,
all right.
Brother, you just keep up the good work and stay safe. And you're right to bring this to the forefront. And everybody, you know, just got to be aware, absolutely aware.
Right on. All right. Thanks a lot, Thank Paul. Brother Pugh. Okay. Thanks a lot for calling in.
Okay.
All right, dear brother. I'm going to have, for those who are listening right now, my guest will be Jeremiah Kamara in his new book, Holy Hierarchy. And we'll talk about his old documentary, Contradiction, and all other things, the slave sermons. Go on. Go to YouTube, slave sermons. Believe me, you'll enjoy it. Sister Saida, thank you for calling in and listening. And Sister 404, thank you, my sister, for calling in and listening. We end this program, like in all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Stay blessed, family. Peace to you. Bibi Fahodie. Bibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Peace, family.